time when it seemed pointless to try selling a semi-automatic military surplus weapon with a high-capacity magazine to people who keep guns for hunting or home defense, even to weapons manufacturers, even to the NRA. Today, one in 20 households in the United States has at least one AR-15 on hand. From KERA in Dallas, this is Think. I'm Chris Boyd. The evolution of the AR-15's reputation among gun owners is fascinating. Where once it seemed like overkill for a civilian to keep a rifle that could be loaded with 30 bullets, now these firearms feel normal, even essential. Of course, those who would prefer to limit the availability of these weapons will note how often they've been used, not only for hunting or collecting, but for mass shootings. Peter Walston is Senior National Investigations Editor at The Washington Post, where you can read his article, The Gun That Divides a Nation. Peter, welcome to Think.
Thanks for having me.
The AR-15 feels like a very 21st century weapon, but it was actually designed in the late 50s by a World War II veteran. What did Eugene Stoner do with this weapon that made it unique?
Well, he created it at a time that the military was looking for a standard issue weapon for its soldiers in combat, and created this weapon. It was actually an automatic weapon that was created for the military that would allow soldiers to fire efficiently, to fire bullets that would be lethal and efficient.
So, what makes wounds from an AR-15 so difficult for a person or an animal to survive?
So there are a few factors. And again, just for context for your listeners, you know, this series we did, I edited the series. We had a lot of reporters and over 60 journalists involved in producing this series that took us about 7 months to pull together. It's actually 9 different stories that examine the AR-15 from lots of different angles. And so one of the pieces I think that you're asking about now is one that we did called The Blast Effect that shows with 3D animations the devastating impact that bullets fired by AR-15s can have on the human body. And the factors that are really most important that are captured in this piece are, first of all, the bullets travel at an incredibly high velocity. And because of that velocity, they enter the body and they create a shockwave effect, essentially that emanates throughout and can really decimate organs and bones and anything in or near its path with inside the body. That's caused largely by the velocity of the bullet. And then, of course, in many of the mass shootings, it's not just the speed of the individual bullet, but it's the fact that many rounds can be fired in rapid succession, one after the other. And because it's very easy, the trigger is very easy to use. And because of the mechanics of the AR-15, because it was really created for a combat situation, the mechanics, the bullet, the rounds are easily put into position in the barrel, and when you can fire the trigger, and you know, 30 magazine, you have a magazine with 30 rounds or 100 rounds, and those rounds can be fired in quick succession.
Will you explain the difference for us between an automatic and semi-automatic firearm?
Well, the semi-automatic requires the shooter to pull the trigger every time.
And these are the ones that are legal in the United States as of, what, 2004?
Correct. Yeah. Many versions of an AR-15. An AR-15 is a platform. Many versions of it were essentially banned by the assault weapons ban from 1994 that was in place from 94 to 2004. And so the rapid growth of the AR-15 as a popular consumer item really occurred after the assault weapons ban expired in 2004.
We should note, by the way, the AR in AR-15 does not stand for assault rifle or automatic rifle. It stands for Armalite rifle. This was an engineering firm, right?
Correct. Excuse me. The gun maker that originally invented it back in the 50s.
What did the Pentagon like about AR-15s when they first started issuing them to soldiers?
Well, they liked that it was lethal and efficient, and so it became the variant of the AR-15 actually became the M16. That was the military version. The AR-15 is the that we are talking about here is really a variant that is the semi-automatic.
Okay, but in the beginning, nobody really thought these would attract any sort of market as semi-automatic weapons for consumers, right? They weren't even pushed at trade shows. Talk a little bit about the climate around the AR-15 originally.
So, as our reporters learned, and Todd Frankel was the lead reporter on the story that tells the history of the AR-15, and he learned through his reporting that, especially back in the beginning, but for decades, the industry, many in the industry, saw the AR-15 as a weapon of war, and frankly not something that would sell, because people were focused on hunting rifles, traditional hunting rifles and handguns, over the course of many years. And a lot of people in the industry and people who were gun owners sort of saw the AR-15 as just, sort of an unwelcome presence. It was not featured at industry trade shows. They were often limited to a small display area in the back of an industry trade show, often cordoned off as an area that really was intended for law enforcement or military. Just not, it was not seen as a consumer product at all.
Right. I mean, what were hunters at the time accustomed to shopping for?
Just the traditional rifles, mostly, not semi-automatic, and certainly not a weapon that was seen as a combat weapon.
What does it feel like to shoot an AR-15 as compared with a conventional rifle?
Well, I haven't shot one, so I can't speak for how it feels. I can tell you that in my own conversations with people who have shot them, and in the interviews that our reporters did, and we did have some people working on the series who have fired AR-15s, that they are just very easy to shoot. There's no One of the appeals of it actually is that there's very little, if any, recoil. That it's very easy and does not take the same degree of sort of muscle to fire it off.
So, about 16 million Americans own one or more AR-15s now. And just even the silhouette of this thing that is quite familiar to us has become a kind of iconic symbol, right?
It has. And in terms of the millions of Americans who own them, I mean, we actually did a survey of nearly 400 AR-15 owners, and we found that the most popular reason for owning an AR-15 is self-defense. People want to protect their families, protect their homes. A lot of people also said they use it for target shooting, or recreation and hunting as well. And so obviously there are a lot of people who own these weapons. They're extremely popular, and they get a lot of attention because of the mass killings and because of the ways that they can devastate the human body. But as we found, they're just extremely popular among many gun owners.
So AR-15s are also tragically a symbol of mass shootings. Are these weapons implicated in mass shootings mostly because they are so common in this country?
It's a good question. I mean, certainly not every mass killing involves an AR-15, and AR-15s are not the only dangerous weapon on the market. But the key factors, what has led the AR-15 to be such a focus, one of the reasons why we chose to do an entire series on it, is that there is just a saturation in the country of this particular style of weapon, and it is the most easy to get, easy to use, and it's just become extremely popular. So it's not surprising that it is a weapon that often is used by these mass killers.
I do want to make sure we mention this. The majority of gun murders in this country are still carried out with handguns, right? Not with AR-15s.
Correct. The vast majority, yes.
What we hear about, though, are the mass killings.
Yeah, I mean, the mass killings generate the most attention. And I think a lot of people, especially when they involve schools and children, they result in people wanting policy changes that lead to, whether it's school security or on one side or on the other side, calling for bans of these style of weapons. You know, President Biden has continued to call for a ban. And so the AR-15 itself generates a lot of debate and discussion and has taken on a really symbolic power in this country, not only in terms of the gun debate, but as you alluded to before, that silhouette of the AR-15 is on hats and shirts, and members of Congress now, some of them wear it on their lapel as a lapel pin, as a symbol of Second Amendment rights. It's really has a political and cultural symbolism that makes it really unusual as a gun and as a consumer product.
How did the idea come about at the Washington Post to do this really broad examination of the rise of the AR-15 and the role it now plays in our society?
So we launched it after the mass killing in Uvalde. We were looking for a way to cover the gun issue, but come at it with a little bit of fresh reporting and a different perspective that might generate some discussion in the public and frankly shed some light on the issue of AR-15s, which have sort of gained increasing prominence in the gun debate, and we're getting a lot of attention. And as we learned, actually from some great reporting by the Texas Tribune in the days before our series published, that it was in fact the fear of the AR-15 among the police who responded at Uvalde that contributed to that long delay before taking action. And in fact, one of the pieces in our series also looked at how the saturation in the country of AR-15s has changed the landscape for police, especially in states. We focused on some police officers in Colorado, which is an open carry state, and it's become incredibly common there for people to be open carrying AR-15s, that the police have to sort of adjust their approach because many of them now have AR-15s. And so as we reported in that story, one of our great reporters, Robert Klemko, found that the AR-15 is both a great threat, a grave threat to these police officers, but also can be their greatest protector if they have one.
So, Peter, a few things occurred to make the AR-15 the top-selling rifle in the United States. What happened in 2004?
So in 2004, there had been an assault weapons ban in place for 10 years. It was passed in 1994 and signed by President Clinton. And it did ban the sale of many of these types of guns. And in 2004, that ban expired. And so that created the foundation or allowed a lot of gun makers, if they so chose, to get in the business of manufacturing and selling AR-15s, which at that point were still just a tiny fraction. You know, it was still not seen as a likely attraction for gun buyers, and it would there was just a very small number of companies that were even producing it.
I appreciate you indulging me by answering questions that might seem very elementary to some listeners, but I think for others, clarification is a good idea. What qualifies a gun of any kind as an assault weapon according to legal definitions in the U.S.?
Well, that term is a little bit of a loose term, to be honest. I mean, I'm not an expert on that ban. I know, generally speaking, that many variants of the AR-15 could not be sold under that ban, but it did not actually prevent the sale of every variant. And there are technicalities in that law that I would get in trouble if I tried to break them down for you. But it was a fairly overarching ban. And it didn't prevent the sale of every type of weapon that many people might consider a quote unquote assault weapon. But that term is also a term that's greatly debated and is a very general term that that many people would argue doesn't actually refer to any gun in particular.
Okay, so the federal assault weapons ban, for purposes of simplicity, expires in 2004. Mm-hmm. Around this time, in the immediate post 9/11 era, there's a lot of pro-military sentiment in the United States. How did that generate interest in a weapon like the AR-15 for consumer use?
So the U.S. was obviously involved in wars in the Middle East, and there was a lot of appreciation. We were sort of post 9/11. There was a great deal of appreciation for the work that U.S. servicemen and women were doing, and there were a lot of images in the media of soldiers carrying weapons that resembled AR-15s. They were obviously the military version but they resembled it. And so that sort of military admiration, some would say glorification, added to, you know, the notion that this was an image to be emulated. And we saw that the gun industry, those that began to manufacture AR-15s for sale, were using these images in their marketing of the weapon. A sort of, you know, use what they use idea that permeated a lot of the advertising.
So in other words, it's like wanting to use professional tools to, you know, style your hair or vacuum your house. The idea was showing people who use these for a living so that the rest of us would want them.
Yeah, sort of use what the professionals use if you need to protect your home or protect your family.
All right, so Smith & Wesson decided to start mass producing AR-15s starting in 2005. How was this possible given that AR stands for Armalite rifle? This was an Armalite product.
For a while, Colt held the patent, and then it expired, and everybody had the right to manufacture AR-15 style weapons.
Okay. And Smith & Wesson named their version of the AR-15, right, to kind of capitalize on that pro-military moment in the culture.
The M&P, right, the military and police, and that did become a big part of their sales pitch.
What, broadly speaking, what does it cost to buy an AR-15?
The price varies. We talk to people. I mean, you know, I think it can be less than 1,000, more than 1,000. It sort of depends on the brand and what other features you get.
Right. And just like lots of things, like a car or whatever, you can buy accessories, you can upgrade additional magazines, right, that make it easier to fire more bullets.
Certainly those are added accessories, but yes, you can accessorize it in all sorts of ways.
So I asked those questions just to get to this one. Like, how do the profit margins on a rifle like the AR-15 compare with the profit margins on a more traditional rifle style?
That's a good question that I don't know the answer to.
Okay. But the sales pitches around these weapons had to convince gun owners who associated hunting rifles with, like, rifles that their parents or grandparents might have carried, right? The old Woodstock version.
Mm-hmm.
How did they do that?
Well, they were, I mean, in part, they were looking for new markets. I think that they our reporting found that that sales had flattened for many of these gun companies, especially during that same time period as the assault weapons ban was expiring. And so these companies, I mean, you mentioned Smith and Wesson as our Todd Frankel, our reporter on that story, found that they were looking for new markets and new opportunities, and they found that because they did not they had not produced a tactical rifle, and they found in their in sort of looking at the marketplace that there was a market for a tactical rifle. And so there was a whole new generation of gun buyers that were, as we discussed earlier, attracted to some of the military imagery. And of course, over time, and it's hard to say how much of a factor this was, but the video game Call of Duty would later be introduced, and there were sort of new generations of potential gun buyers who were drawn to the look and feel of the AR-15.
What did the gun industry have to do with working weapons that at least looked like AR-15s into popular video games?
Well, we had one scene in the story where there were a couple of there was some video game makers and gun manufacturers who came together at one point in time in the Las Vegas desert to record the sounds. The video game makers were interested in getting the sound of the weapon exactly right. That was one example we found. It is, I can't say whether that was a pattern, but it was certainly one moment, one anecdote in the story. And it's not clear that there was a the there was it's not clear the extent to which there was a real partnership between those two industries, and to the extent that there may have been one, it soon fell apart.
I thought it was so interesting that, I mean, surely there was a market among people who just thought these military style weapons looked cool exactly as there were. But the gun manufacturers also made a concerted case to people who had their doubts by selling these things as just a modern upgrade, right? Like you wouldn't have that wall telephone your grandparents had. You have an iPhone in your hand. This idea that it might look different from what you knew before, but this is just what people use now to go hunting.
Yeah, in fact, they coined the phrase the modern sporting rifle. That's a phrase that's still used now. They call it an MSR, and that's exactly what that came out of. It's just a desire to try to convince people that this might not be your grandfather's rifle, but you can use it. It's a sporting rifle. You can use it for hunting. You can use it for target shooting. They really worked hard to rebrand the AR-15 so that it wasn't necessarily seen as a combat weapon or a military weapon, but a weapon that any person can own and have fun with.
So the AR-15 is selling well as of like 2006, 2007, not just Smith and Wesson, but other companies. Why did sales really just jump off the charts starting in 2008?
So one thing that our reporters found is that the weapon sales of the weapon or production of the weapon, which is really our best measure of sales, really spiked anytime there was over sort of post 2004, as time progressed, whenever there was political change or turmoil in the country, or a mass shooting, anytime there was the perceived threat that maybe a Democrat would win office and try to impose a new assault weapons ban or a new form of gun control, sales spiked. And so in 2008, there was a big presidential election, and Barack Obama was obviously became the Democratic nominee. There was also a great deal of economic turmoil in the country. In 2008, with the market collapse, and so all of these factors came together, and it was one of the earliest spikes of AR-15 sales that we documented was 2008.
Pro-gun groups were warning members that a ban on these semi-automatic rifles might be imminent. Was that actually on Barack Obama's agenda?
Not especially. I mean, they did warn, they were warning that really any Democrat would probably try to impose an assault weapons ban. That was the claim that they were making. Some in the industry joked that Obama was the best gun salesman of all. I think they called him Salesman of the Year in 2008 because they portrayed him as a liberal who would take your guns. And of course, he had been caught on tape during the campaign speaking to a fundraiser where he referenced people clinging to their guns. And that quote was widely amplified by the by gun rights supporters.
I'm asking here, Peter, for a gross generalization, and I will stipulate that. But what do we know about who buys this style of rifle? Who's in the market for an AR-15?
Well, our survey found that it's quite a I mean, all kinds of people buy them in every corner of the country, rural, suburban, urban. It's 16 million Americans. It's a lot of people who own them. I mean, they might tend to be a little more, maybe more likely to live in states that Trump won. Maybe more likely to be Republican, more likely to be white and male. That's all true. But really, all kinds of people are represented who live in all regions of the country. And in fact, and as I said earlier, it's a lot of the similar reasons, largely, and the most popular one being self-defense.
How have gun manufacturers and their advertisers learned to kind of lean into the idea that AR-15s are something very masculine men would want to have?
Well, they for one thing, they use very have in the past used very masculine imagery and sayings. I mean, that some of these ads have slogans in them like "kick brass" and "your man card reissued" and so forth. So some of them are less subtle than others, but there's definitely an effort across. We one of the pieces in the series looked at marketing over the years, and so there are a number of ads that we've annotated in that piece that do focus a lot on masculinity. I mean, there are also ads that have featured women and do seek to sort of broaden the marketplace as well to attract women gun owners. So it's not entirely, it's not solely seen as masculine, but there is a sort of thread of masculinity throughout a lot of the advertising.
The shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary in 2012 was carried out by an assailant armed with an AR-15. How did that specific event affect the debate around these weapons?
So that was really one of the earliest moments that a lot of Americans became aware of the AR-15. The shooter in that case, Adam Lanza, had an AR-15. Obviously, there was a devastating loss. There were some victims needed to be identified with DNA because their bodies were so decimated. And it was one of the moments on the timeline that where the AR-15 sort of started to emerge as a phenomenon. And in our reporting, 2012 really sort of emerged as a pivotal year where sales sort of reached new levels. And obviously, that is a moment that well, an assault weapons ban had not been on Barack Obama's agenda as much, perhaps when he ran. He at this point in 2012, he did push for strong gun control after the shooting. And there was even a vote in the Senate. It was an assault weapons ban was defeated. But that push for banning these sorts of weapons, it seems, did contribute to another spike in sales.
So, Peter, the Sandy Hook Elementary shooting in 2012 reignites this debate over whether this country ought to allow semi-automatic rifles. And this is when the NRA issues this just incredibly effective aphorism, right? What was the line?
I think you're talking about the best way to stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun, the Wayne LaPierre line.
Yeah. And that seems to have found its way into sort of popular speech almost immediately.
Yeah, I mean it's an argument that the NRA has continued to make, and other opponents of banning AR-15s and other similar weapons. And that's certainly an argument that is made. One of the areas, another article in our series, and again, there's nine different stories in the series, which we call American Icon. One of the pieces looks at how one area of regulation, even an assault weapons ban, may be sort of politically unrealistic these days, in terms of passing in Congress and many state legislatures. But one area of regulation is that some states are attempting to ban high-capacity magazines. Some have, but even in that debate, opponents of banning high-capacity magazines have said that if you eliminate the ability of people to buy high capacity magazines, then they won't, they will lose the ability to respond to criminal activity or to something, to a dangerous situation if they need it. So that good guy with a gun argument does sort of permeate every aspect of this debate now.
So, something like 1 in 20 American households has an AR-15. What does polling tell us about the percentage of Americans who think it might be appropriate to ban assault rifles?
So we didn't poll on that for the series. In general, my understanding of the polling on that is that it has, changed a bit over time, but it tends to be 50-50 in the country, nationally on banning assault weapons. Sometimes a slight majority supports it, sometimes a slight majority opposes it. But I'm not an expert on that aspect of the polling.
How did the open carry movement take hold?
So that occurred sort of in that period after Newtown. My colleagues interviewed a guy in Texas, in your state of Texas, who started carrying the AR-15, and he was actually approached by an officer who attempted to take his weapon away. And that got a lot of attention. That moment sort of went viral. And it really did start that movement where it's legally allowed. People began to sort of carry their AR-15s in public as a form of protest or as a way to demonstrate Second Amendment rights, and it became very popular.
So, because of this, in part, AR-15s have become kind of a mainstream weapon. It is, in many parts of the United States, less shocking than it once would have been to see somebody walking around with one of these.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned earlier in states with open carry. I mean, in Colorado, it's fairly common now. And in fact, our reporter on that story was told that the police generally there, I mean, they don't really, they don't respond anymore. If a person, a concerned citizen, calls and says there's a person walking down the street with an AR-15, their response is, well, they've got to be doing something bad for us to respond. They're not violating the law.
Are AR-15s or the equivalent widely available in a lot of other countries?
We didn't examine other countries, but it really does, from our reporting, though, it really is an American phenomenon. I mean, they are heavily marketed here, and the sales are really here.
Listeners may have forgotten this, but after the shooting at Parkland High School, President Trump spoke briefly about some kind of assault weapons ban or limit. What became of that?
He did. He spoke openly of it, actually said it to Senator Dianne Feinstein of California, who was perhaps the most prominent supporter of recreating the assault weapons ban. He was on live television. Our reporters learned that he also repeatedly brought it up privately with aides. He really was open to it. At one point, he even asked his advisors, you know, why does anyone even need an AR-15? You know, he was very open to it. And as our reporters learned, lobbyists and advocates for gun rights, including the NRA, went and warned him and his people that that it would really hurt him with his base if he went forward with an assault weapons ban. And then so he sort of backed off of it. And then that also sort of started to morph into the time period of his first impeachment. And then he just said, forget it at that point.
There are people who told your reporter that if anyone could have gotten such a ban passed, it would have been Donald Trump.
Yeah, that was Senator Chris Murphy told one of our reporters on the story that he actually mentioned that to President Trump, that it's for Senator Chris Murphy's a Democrat from Connecticut, and who is a big proponent of gun control. And he was in a meeting at the time, and he told President Trump that, you know, boy, you could really more than unlike any other Republican, you could really be the one to make this happen because they would follow you. And of course, President Trump didn't take his advice.
So the NRA of old was a different sort of organization than we have today. Is there some reason why the NRA has taken on every possible firearm, including things like the AR-15, rather than just sort of more broadly supporting the right to own some sort of gun?
Our reporting, to the extent that we reported this aspect of it in this series, you know, there are people who were involved in the NRA who talked about how, among those who remain members of the NRA, the AR-15 is a very popular weapon. And so to that extent, the NRA is representing the views of its members. That's just the reality of sort of gun ownership today and of the NRA's membership. So, if you go to an industry trade show or an NRA convention, the AR-15 is front and center. The NRA itself, calls it America's rifle. I can't speak to the motives of the NRA per se, but it has fully embraced the AR-15, and the AR-15 is, the most popular rifle in America, and where it was just a tiny fraction of the number of guns sold years ago, now it's about 1 in 4.
So the NRA. The NRA gets funding from, card-carrying members. Does it also get funding from gun manufacturers?
I'm not an expert on the NRA sort of funding mechanism these days, so I can't speak to that.
Okay. Why did the pandemic once again drive a spike in AR-15 sales? I mean, everybody was at home, not out on the street. What were people's concerns, as far as your reporters learned?
Well, again, as we've found, anytime there is a sense of of turmoil or change in the country. Gun sales spiked in the pand, and it wasn't just the pandemic, of course. There was the murder of George Floyd, and there were a sort of spike in political and racial justice and other demonstrations. And there was the presidential election. That's a lot of turmoil and a lot of instability in the country. And so all of that was sort of adding up to a scenario where people were feeling less safe. But the sort of extremist groups were maybe getting arming themselves, both as we found on the right and on the left. The far left, that's extremist militant groups. But also just a lot of people probably feeling unsafe and wanting to protect themselves and their families. There was just a lot of instability on the country in the country throughout on multiple fronts during that time period.
Peter, if one in 20 households currently has an AR-15, that's a significant percentage. Are gun makers starting to think about whether they might have reached something like a saturation point for selling AR-15s?
I don't know what they're actually thinking, but they're not showing any signs of letting up. Smith and Wesson introduced a new AR-15 model just this past year, it's definitely still a focus of their marketing and of their production. So I see we see no evidence that they're slowing down or changing their strategy.
So, as these new models come out, are they more powerful or potentially more lethal than older versions of the AR-15?
They seem to be basically the same platform, but just with different features and different looks and so forth. I don't see any evidence that they're any more lethal or that the mechanics have changed.
Are we in a place now politically where it seems impossible to reinstate a ban on assault weapons in this country?
I don't want to predict. Politics changes fast in this country. It's hard to say. I mean, obviously the Republicans control the House now. The Democrats control the Senate. But even when Democrats the Democratic-led House passed an assault weapons ban before they lost right before they handed control over to the Republicans, and the Democrats ran the Senate and didn't take it up. In 2013, in the wake of the Sandy Hook shooting, the measure, an assault weapons ban came into before the Senate. The Democrats had 54 seats in the Senate, I believe, and 16 Democrats voted against it. They got only 38 Democratic votes, and one Republican supported it at the time. Plus Bernie Sanders, who was an independent, so it got 40 votes. But that's just a way of saying that it seems like it hasn't really had a chance, no matter which party has been in power in Washington. Obviously, the Republican Party is much more supportive of is staunchly against gun control, I should say, right now in terms of an assault weapons ban. Not every form of gun control, but certainly an assault weapons ban. The Democrats have not been open to it either. Senator Murphy, who we talked about earlier, said that he thinks the politics among Democrats has changed now, that because of this, all of these, this spate of mass killings in recent years. Especially after Parkland, where in 2018, where there was a bit of a new youth movement built around calling for an assault weapons ban. Murphy thinks that that has sort of, as he put it, shamed the Democrats into supporting an assault weapons ban. So maybe the politics of the Democratic Party has changed right now, but they don't have the power to do it. He may be right about that. We pointed in the story to one Democrat, Mark Warner, a Virginia senator, who voted against the assault weapons ban in 2013 and has come out publicly to say that he has thought a lot about that vote and wrestled with it, and now he supports an assault weapons ban.
Peter Walston is Senior National Investigations Editor at the Washington Post, where you can read the article, The Gun That Divides a Nation, and a number of others on the same topic. Peter, this has been very interesting. I appreciate you making the time to talk.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
You can find us on Facebook and Instagram. And if you want the podcast, it's free wherever you get podcasts. Just do a search for KERA Think and subscribe. You can also listen at our website, think.kera.org. Again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.